Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of Storage Unpacked with me, Martin Glassborough, and my two compatriots, Chris Evans and Gavin McLaughlin. Hello guys, how are we?
Hey Martin, how are you doing?
Hello Martin, hello Chris.
We don't have a special guest today, so you're just going to have to put up the three of us wittering on about stuff. Chris, you saw an announcement earlier this week or last week about Dell EMC killing their open source advocacy program. So we thought we'd have a discussion about that and value of open source in storage. So Chris, Dell have killed their open source advocacy program. Do you want to give us some background about the program and what it was and what they've just done?
Yeah, so you may have heard of EMC Code, which was a group I think set up about 4 years ago by, well, when the company was EMC rather than when it was inside Dell. And the idea I think was to create advocacy around creating open source code. Let's think of it in a very positive way. And the sort of things that I've seen them do are things like plugins for Docker with Rex Ray. We'll come on to all of those sort of things in a moment. But really, it was a mishmash of a huge number of projects, mostly focused around the container side of things and plugins for storage. Now, about a week ago, there was an announcement came out, very quick announcement came out on their own website and on Twitter and so on, saying that Dell had decided to stop funding the people who worked in that team. And as a result, they were out of a job or appeared to be out of a job. What's not clear to me at this point is, although those people now don't have a job, I don't know whether it means that the whole thing is closed down, because obviously this was very much meant to be a community effort. And therefore, you'd hope that the whole thing would still continue past the fact that the guys aren't employed to do that job anymore.
I just wonder how many contributors they had outside of Dell EMC. Because without an active community, open source tends to die on the vine.
Yeah, I'd agree. Now, I remember seeing some numbers that there was something like 4,000 or 5,500 people on their Slack channel. I know you think Slack's bollocks, but well, you know, they obviously had at least a few people joining that particular channel. And that must mean that there must have been a reasonable number of people. Although I do think you're right. I think that there could have been a very narrow focus in terms of the number of people who were actually contributing to things.
So I just wonder why they killed it, because if I had 4,000 or 5,000 users on a Slack channel, that sounds relatively popular in my eyes. I just wonder if it's a case where there's just not a profit to be made. There's no money in it.
I agree. I think if you look at it, if I was looking at what Dell's up to, I would say that they've got that open source side of things in other parts of the company. So VMware do some of that side of things. Pivotal definitely do that side of things. But I'm not sure whether really it's a focus for the EMC, historical EMC business. And I suspect that maybe they thought it would be a great way of generating some interest and making it look like EMC had more of an interest in the software side of things, you know, promoting the software-defined storage side within the business. But it doesn't seem to me like it generated enough interest to make it worthwhile funding however many people were involved.
Anyway, so let's move it on a bit, because I know Gavin's probably going to find it hard to contribute to any conversation about Dell EMC these days. So let's push on. And so it led us to the question, the value of open source in storage, and a general discussion about whether open source actually has a place in storage. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of open source storage platforms out there at the moment.
There is, but I think Chris hit the nail on the head. You've got to look at where companies are in the marketplace today, some of the commercial pressures that are coming on them. We've talked to death about storage vendors running at a loss and funding things that can't actually turn a profit. And one of the problems I found, especially if I go back to when I was working at Sun, and as you know, Sun were big campaigners around open source for more things other than storage, and some of the ZFS stuff I worked on, is how do you actually turn that into a profitable business, A, bearing in mind, B, how many people are prepared to put open source software into production? And what you do is you start to narrow quite dramatically the number of people that are using it. And what you often see is that people will go out and use open source platforms in things like DevOps and in test platforms in the background, but they're not prepared to put it into commercial. Then you start to get in the pushback from the business, which is saying, well, we want the same platform in test and dev as we do in prime time. So therefore, we want it to be the same platform. So it all goes backwards back through the business. And Martin, this is maybe a question for you, working in an enterprise organization, is what is your guys' belief on using open source platforms, and is there an inherent risk?
It's an inherent risk. I think you'd probably work out exactly what we're going to put on it. I would say that we do use open source platforms, and we use open source platforms for all kinds of things, not just for storage. Obviously, every enterprise in the world pretty much runs a big proportion of their production workloads on an open source operating system in the form of Linux. The file systems underneath are open source. So we do an awful lot of storage on open source already.
That's true, but then this is where we get into the degree degrees of open sourceness. Is that a word? Am I turning American here? Is that if you actually have, as you use an example, you know, a file system that's based upon Linux, but then has a shim or a layer on top of it that is heavily supported, then that turns it into a sort of almost semi-open source type scenario. And it comes back to risk and how well supported a platform is. I'm guessing what we're hearing here is that Dell EMC are more concerned about funding support for some of their platforms built on open source rather than the actual open source development code itself.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think that seems to be the way I'd view it. It doesn't necessarily say that Dell aren't interested in open source. It just says they're not interested in having people being paid to develop that stuff permanently.
And it is hard to make the money. I mean, Sun obviously fell foul of this quite dramatically because they moved to an open source model and couldn't work out how to monetize it. I think, you know, the history is littered with companies that have tried to go down that model of open source, open standard, so to speak, and have just not been able to get the support and or consulting revenues that go alongside it. And it's not just support revenues, it's consulting revenues that sit around it. And we come back to the classic buy versus build argument that I think we've probably done to death a number of times, especially when we talked about software defined, which is the point you just raised, Martin.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, though. I just wonder, if you look at those products in the open source storage world, which have been successful, most of them haven't come out of large companies, large vendors. A lot of them have come from the community to start with or fitting a need. So we've got things like Ceph, Clustered, probably. And then you've probably got the largest open source product in the world, and that's Samba. So Samba fulfilled a need, and just about everybody will use it somewhere in their environment.
I don't think many people would think that Samba is that sort of open source platform like you would think of maybe a Ceph or something like that. I don't know whether people would think that it's, think of it in the same way. People probably think somebody is paid to write and develop Samba and ship it out.
Well, they are, but it's still very much a community effort. I mean, it's certainly for a large portion of time, and I'm not sure whether this is true these days, but the core developers of Samba were being paid by IBM, not for any reason that IBM were doing it as a product, but they were being paid by IBM. You'd argue Ceph and Gluster, a large number of their developers are paid by Red Hat, but they all came from a community to start with, so there was a groundswell before. It wasn't a big enterprise or a big vendor coming in and trying to impose something or trying push something on a community that thought, hang on a minute, where's your hidden agenda on this?
So a couple of points there, I'd say. First of all, I suspect maybe the Samba guys have just got lost in IBM and nobody knows who they even work for. So maybe they're just on a list and nobody's ever actually managed to track them down. Actually, I did meet them one of the guys a couple of years ago, so I know that's not the case. I was only being slightly facetious. But if you look at the other platforms, obviously Red Hat acquired some of these technologies recently. But I wonder how much of that for, say, Red Hat is driven by the fact that there's an inherent benefit for them doing it. So, for instance, look at SolidFire and getting involved in OpenStack. They clearly had a lot of people working on the OpenStack platform, but maybe they saw that as being inherent to driving some value to their business, where, like Gavin said, Dell didn't see any value being driven for their business by developing the open source side of the house.
But Samba's a great example where, yes, there are people using, you know, what I would call the raw code base of Samba, but most deployments of Samba are people taking it and doing things with it. Certainly, I've worked for a number of companies that have used Samba and then developed it. And that point earlier is then putting a later presentation layer on it, actually putting support wrapped around it and turning it into a productized, I'm going with the Americanisms tonight, aren't I? A productized version of the product.
So as well as file systems and NAS, we've also had the attempt to open source for control plane. That is how you configure and manage devices. So we had Viper or Copperhead, which was the open source from EMC, which I had to play with even within our environment in my day job. And it worked. It was pretty good, but it just never managed to get any kind of traction as far as I could see within the third parties. Now, I know, Chris, you feel that EMC may have been trying to be a little bit cynical when they did the Copperhead open source.
Yeah, I do. And I'll tell you the reason why, because before Viper was released, when it was originally being, I guess, put together and packaged up, they took some software from a company called iWave. And I actually spoke to the guys from iWave. They were based in the UK as well as somewhere in Texas, I think. But they were based in the UK and they had what looked like a really good product. And there was one company we were thinking of actually using it in as a tool where we could abstract away the understanding of the environment and just have people who would just do us provisioning stuff up, and they didn't have to understand all the back end storage and everything. And it seemed like it could have been a great tool for that. Now, I know when they actually packaged Viper up, I went somewhere else, and allegedly in that first release they'd ripped out some of the good parts of iWave, and that didn't come in until Viper version 2. But obviously, one of the problems with that technology was, even though that seemed like a great piece of technology they could have then sold on, their difficulty was the fact that how do you, like all SRM type stuff, how do you get it to support other platforms? Because clearly, if you don't have access to the API or the process for actually provisioning those platforms, you're sort of semi-guessing. And that's not the sort of thing you want to get wrong. So I think they thought that maybe by producing the Copperhead version, they could effectively open source it, other people would write for it, and then they could reintegrate back into Viper. But that policy didn't really work.
Yeah, so we found the way to get anything to plug into Copperhead was to use Cinder plugins, and that seemed to make life a little bit easier and a little bit quicker. I just don't think anybody believed EMC wanted to make this a community effort. I think there was certainly a lack of credibility there, and we've seen it before. We saw it in every storage management initiative, but nobody wants to play together. So even an open sourcing didn't seem to really pick up success.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's not in a lot of people's best interest to have an open, common platform. I think AppIQ was the first example of where, you know, HP took it away, put it in the corner and shot it in the back of the head. And I remember talking to a lot of customers at the time that were really keen to have an abstraction layer. But as you said, it's getting people to work together, even with things like SMS. It's just been impossible, and I don't think we're ever going to truly see that. The closest we've come to it is actually VMware, and that's about it.
So let's go back to open source, just the general idea of open source in storage. Almost the most valuable thing or most valuable asset a company has is its data and its information. I mean, so from our point of view, in our enterprise, we do use Ceph. We've used Gluster in the past, but we don't really keep anything, as far as I'm concerned, which we would want to persist, which we really care about. If we really care about it, you put it on something which you're going to pay for support. Well, you need it. Do you see this as one of the reasons why open source, certainly within a big enterprise, certainly from a storage point of view, well, it's not really gained the traction it might do?
I think you have to ask the question, why would you use it? So what is it you're gaining by using an open source version of a platform rather than buying a paid version? And if you decide that it's a cost, then you've got to look at the platform itself and then say, how mature is it? And what's my investment going to be in that platform to be able to use it? So if you look at, say, some of the earlier things like Ceph, you would have to spend a lot of time helping those guys who wrote it, debugging it, testing it. You were effectively testing it as part of having it in your environment. So really, you're not using it in any production form. You're committing to hardware resources. You're committing to time and effort. So there needs to be some long-term reason why you think you'd want to get involved in something like that. And I think that's a big problem for organizations, that unless they've got the ability to dedicate resources and have dedicated people working on a team like that, they're just not going to put people onto something like that and say, yeah, go and play 2 days a week on trying to get that Ceph platform up. There's plenty of other work for them to be doing.
Yeah, I like to say that we're not all Google, we're not all Amazon. Amazon and Google have clever developers coming out of their heads, and they're quite happy to have people doing things like this. Most enterprises have people who they want to be able to make money and actually develop business value.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think in general, if you look at the history of where, say, the storage people came from, a lot of storage people were very good at administration, which is, I guess, why they're always called storage administrators. But they weren't necessarily coders or people who did a lot of scripting to the degree that you'd need to do in order to make something like Ceph hang together like you did when it first came out. You'd need to be almost like a Linux system administrator to really understand all the different components going on.
It goes back to the thing that persistence is hard and losing data is pretty terrible. So if you corrupted a hard drive, it doesn't matter what size, you're probably in shtuck. If your server reboots itself, what's the worst that's happened? You lost a half an hour's worth of compute, but you've probably not lost your data.
Absolutely, which comes back to that risk point. It's that people will sit there and calculate the risk.
And as the token vendor representative, Gavin, then, you know, clearly there's a throat to choke, there's a blame thing there where you can go to the vendor and say, you're responsible, you need to fix it. And if you're a big enough customer and you've got that access, they're going to throw people at you. And if you spend a lot of money with them, they're going to throw people at you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the key point is, and I've worked with a number of products that do, as I said, take open source code as a base. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, that some of the biggest problems I've experienced in this industry have been where it's code that doesn't actually belong to that company, and they've had to go back and try and almost reverse engineer or go right back to basics because it's code that wasn't theirs from the ground up. So I can see why a number of vendors have a hesitancy. I can see some vendors have based their products on it. You look at Agile, for example, you know, they've taken a lot of open source code and stabilized it and actually put a layer around it and a wrapper around it. But again, they've done that to protect their customers so they can take the best of both worlds. They save themselves the grief of building a product from the ground up. So I can see why there's value to vendors in using the open source code. I still don't get why vendors would want to fund that right from the beginning. I just can't get my head around that.
Yeah, I don't get it from that point of view. But there is another big company, Red Hat, who seem to be trying to make a storage business. They want that as one of their strings to the bow. So they've got, obviously, they've got Ceph, they bought Inktank, they've got Gluster.
I think they're still struggling exactly how to commercialize that storage business, because you've got the difference. It's like, this is exactly the conversation we had around software-defined storage. You've got a gap. You've got the buy versus build argument, and you've got one extreme of the Red Hat products, and you've got the other extreme of some of the pre-built appliances that are out there. And it's kind of that gap in the middle, is that how can people take it? I think, you know, I'll give kudos to Tejal. I've probably been one of the best at leveraging open source platforms and turning it into a commercialized product. You know, we can argue the relative merits of their success and the numbers that are based around that. But yeah, whether Red Hat can actually do that is yet to be seen. I am seeing a lot of noise from them, though, so it'd be interesting to watch.
Yeah, so if you're a vendor, how do you make money out of open source storage? So what is the route to monetization? Just say you've decided this is what you're going to do. So what do you do?
It's one of three things. You either put a wrapper around it and turn it into an appliance. You charge very high amounts for enterprise support. So a lot of people I've seen out there will allow the product to go out for free with, you know, standard support or no support whatsoever or community support, and then provide a layer on top that says you can turn this into an enterprise product. Someone like Starwind, for example, have done a good job of that, of layering on top. Or option three is consultancy. So it's almost like an SI approach of building services around it, which was originally Sun's intention with a lot of the ZFS stuff, was to build a consulting organization around it. The only problem was they couldn't actually work out how to do that. So the importance of monetization just never really happened. But they did make appliances. They did the first stage I talked about. They took ZFS and turned it into appliances. The interesting S7000 product, which is probably best not talked about.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few companies that tried a freemium model. SwiftStack did something similar, didn't they, Chris? With, you could have the open source version, but if you wanted their enterprise management tools on top, it was you had to pay for those. So you can put a tools layer on top as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of Swift was open source. Is it still an open source platform?
I think it's still an open source platform, but I think if you want the enterprise management tools, I think you have to are chargeable.
Right.
And then you got, so Red Hat are very interesting, because they, even though they claim CentOS isn't supported, CentOS is the parallel product, and a lot of the CentOS developers now are working for or are paid for by Red Hat, as far as I know. So if you want the Red Hat product but you don't necessarily want to pay for it, you can go down the CentOS route, but yet again, you don't get all the fancy management front end.
See, that gets us back to the original conversation about Dell EMC and what they were doing their development for. And obviously, it does make you wonder whether what they were trying to do was drive more adoption of some of their storage solutions. So for obviously things like Rexray was doing plugins for things like Scale.io and so on, but maybe there just wasn't the Docker container demand to drive enough business that was going to drag Scale.io across to being more interesting, simply because that Docker side of the business just wasn't strong enough. Not because they weren't selling any, but just because Docker hasn't really got to where people thought it was going to get to.
Dell EMC have done some interesting things anyway with things like Scale. And ECS, I think, as well, was basically you can have it for free. You just don't get support. There may be some terms and conditions about put it into production. Well, I'm not even sure they're there anymore. If you want to put it into production, you can do. But if you haven't paid for support, you're not getting it. So if you get yourself in a mess, they'll say, well, obviously, we can help you out, but where's your checkbook? So they're kind of challenging some of the open source vendors on that side of things as well, saying, well, the value for open source for a lot of people is that it's free, so you can just put it on. But if you can have a commercial product for free.
Yeah, and that's an interesting angle, because that just makes you wonder whether the whole software, whether it's free as a commercial product or whether it's free as a an open source product in the storage world, whether any of them are really gaining enough traction.
Yeah, I do wonder about that.
It's just a different way of charging for it, though. It always gets me with the the subscription models and the subscription support models. You know, a lot of these products are incredibly difficult to deploy without support, so it's just a different way of monetizing. It's the whole HP printer argument, you know, sell the printer at a loss and charge for the ink. It's just that, you know, they'll give the software away for free and then get it back on the support later on.
But even that support model is quite tough as well, I think. Yep. For a lot of vendors, because yet again, open source has a lot of flexibility. But as soon as you start going down a support model, you find that there are certified hardware platforms, so they'll only support you if you're running certain specific hardware. Or, for instance, if you were to go and layer it on top of a a white box server, you find that very rapidly you're in problems, because if you say, well, it's for drivers,
yep,
and you're really then as a customer potentially you're caught between two stalls. So surely as a customer you might be better just going to a single person, either buying an appliance or just buying a commercial product, because you can got one throat to choke.
Absolutely. It's back to that point about risk, is that if you're in an environment where it doesn't matter if you lose the data, if you're not worried about persistent storage and you can afford to have downtime, then yeah, take advantage of some of these models. But the majority of people that I know are going out and deploying it, it's, you know, they can't afford that risk.
Yeah.
So do you think if we'd had a benevolent dictator, a bit like Linus or Linus, depending on how you decide to call him, do you think if we'd had a benevolent dictator for a storage platform who'd been so rigorous and so determined like he was with Linux, do you think that might have made it more, that might have made somebody more successful?
We had it in Jonathan Schwartz. Look where that got him.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I suppose in some respects he was, yeah. But do you think he was aggressive enough? Do you think he gave people the middle finger?
Was Jonathan Schwartz aggressive? I think he wrote some haiku about it.
Okay, just checking.
Not that I'm bitter or anything.
No.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Chris. I think, yeah, if somebody had really taken it and run with it, we might have seen it. But we've just look where Linux came from. Linux came from a hobbyist market. People will put it onto small machines. Storage doesn't tend to be small. It's never really been small, so it would have been tough, but we might have seen it.
Now, I think you're right in that respect. The fact that there are plenty of small-scale storage platforms out there that are open-source software, bits of software. There's various different things you can deploy. But in reality, for somebody to make any money out of it and actually get anything of any value, or to fit in a large enterprise, you need something that scales significantly. And how would you ever test or develop something like that, that scaled across tens or hundreds of nodes, unless you had access to some hardware through a friendly vendor or some other process? That would have been really hard.
And we've not really seen it in networking either. So storage and networking, we've seen some attempts with an open source networking, but it's not really there. You still go to the big boys and you still pay for their support.
There's a reason these companies exist. It's about demand and, as I said, risk.
I think we're bringing the conversation to a logical close. So do we think open source does have a part to play in the world of storage?
I think it has a part to play, but not in enterprise storage. And I think that's where you need to categorize the different use cases. As I've said, there's been a lot of arguments that says that big enterprises should use it in test dev and in the back end. But my experience has been you want the same platform running through, because it's utterly, you know, there's no point testing on a completely different platform until you're going to go into prime time. So I think it's going to be for, you know, as I said, customers at the back end who are prepared to have downtime, are prepared to lose data.
Or perhaps we're getting to a stage where a lot of customers are actually using open source storage. They just don't know about it.
I think there's a lot of people that are using open source software code in their storage platforms and are not aware of it. That's definitely the case, because I know of a number of vendors, and let's not go into lists, who are using open source code but wrapping it with a layer, as I said, to protect them, their customers from it.
And then there's the whole cloud. So as enterprises start to move more workloads into the cloud, you don't know what it's running on. It could be open source, it could be anything. You probably don't care, as long as you've got an SLA involved and you can shout at somebody.
It's about persistence and downtime, yes.
Yeah, it's about the ability to have something to shout at.
That's the one.
We all like that. It goes back to our videos. You remember the video of the sun chap shouting at his storage to try and make it go faster? In the world of storage, you just need somebody to shout at.
That was my product. I was heavily involved in that one. You just reminded me of that great video.
Yes. Okay, guys, it's been a good conversation. I think we feel that open source has a role to play, whether it's in enterprise, probably not, unless you've got a wrapper in front of it or unless you've got somebody to shout at. So good chat, guys.
Thank you.
Yep. Cheers, Martin. Catch up with you soon.